Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight Podcast number 230, recording this on Friday, the 21st of December, 2012. I guess we should wish all our listeners a very happy Christmas, Ralph Blandford.
I think we should, and we should probably also wish them the best for the new year as well, because I doubt we're going to squeeze one in between Christmas and the new year. So I guess we can look ahead to 2013, maybe at the end of the podcast. But even if you're not celebrating Christmas, I guess it's fair to say that everybody's sort of looking forward to the new year and what may come.
Yes, and we'll be looking forward to what's maybe happening in the year in terms of the technical side of things later in this podcast. Just a few news stories that are worthy of comment. It's been about 2 weeks since our last All About Symbian podcast, Rafe. Nokia Maps has had an update, not the traditional application update. In this case, it's an update of the base maps. I do know that I've got a couple of guys in New Zealand who have been saying for the last 6-7 months, Steve, when are Nokia going to update the maps? There are some out-of-date roads down here. Please, please nag Nokia to update their maps. And they have. So if you go into the Nokia Maps on your Symbian smartphone, tap on the menu icon, then on the map loader, and then check for updates. There's about a 250 megabyte update for me for the UK, but it may, of course, be higher depending on where you live, or smaller if you live in a smaller country. And the release date of the maps is 17th of December 2012. So, Ray, that's a pretty update. That's, what, sort of three days ago. That's a very fast rollout of this particular update. And I guess it's good to see that new map data is coming across from the wider, you know, Nokia Here platform and Windows Phone and actually feeding back into the Symbian map system.
Yes, I mean, I guess this is one of the big advantages Nokia has of owning the map data. They can possibly roll out these map updates faster than anyone else. And I mean, for those that don't know, the way that Navtech works, I should really call it Here, you're quite right, or the Maps and Location, or Location and Commerce Division, I think it's the official title these days. But it all comes out of this Navtech data, and this is constantly being updated. I mean, sometimes you'll even see Navtech cars driving about, and sometimes they can be the old-fashioned one, sometimes they can be the newer one that's also doing LiDAR collection. And it's a really fascinating subject. I guess I shouldn't get into it too much here, but you know, they're collecting data, they're collecting it from, you know, places of interest, you know, so restaurants, they're updating all of that all the time, new reviews. But kind of the most important one, I think, is the map data itself. You know, as you say, new roads, changing a junction, and all sorts of other things. You know, anyone will tell you, you know, any city that you live in, it's kind of constantly in a state of flux, and in some places more than others. And also it's a question of increase in coverage, because sometimes not all the roads are covered. Yeah, that's an ongoing process, and what Nokia do is actually 4 times a year they kind of do a new release of maps. In other words, they kind of push all the updates into, if you like, the main database, or the, you know, the publicly accessible database, and all of Nokia's licensees for maps have a right to access and use that. There is actually a charge for it in most cases, which is why when you buy a sat nav, sometimes you'll see, you know, map updates included, or there'll be an extra fee. But of course, as far as Nokia is concerned, for its own applications, I imagine there is, you know, no direct fee involved. I mean, in terms of accounting, they do actually charge themselves for the maps. If you ever look at the Nokia results, you'll see some of the lines in there that talk about that. So it's not free in one sense, but of course it does mean that these sort of updates get delivered as quickly as possible. And you're quite right, because it's, you know, sharing this common base in terms of the data. And this applies to maps, but also places and reviews and all sorts of other things. Symbian actually benefits from having very up-to-date maps, you know, more so than, you know, other platforms, or at least other sat-nav solutions, both for Symbian and other platforms do have. And so it's kind of, I guess, one of the big advantages of Nokia having spent, you know, $7 billion buying Navtech a few years back.
Yeah, I did try this also on the S65th edition Nokia X6, and the map updates were also available there. I was wondering kind of how far back to go. I'm guessing, Rafe, that this base map update will probably apply even to things like S63rd edition feature pack 2 devices like the N86. I mean, probably not as far back as the N95, but because, of course, that uses an older version of maps. But I think this could well delve into the S63rd edition world as well.
I'd have to go back and check. I mean, you'll remember, if you go back a few years, that the kind of idea of being able to download maps, you know, something that was introduced, and particularly the idea that you could update them yourself easily from the device. It used to be you had to use map loader and things like that. So I don't know where the cutoff period would be without going to check. I mean, if anyone's got any you know, feedback on that, let us know and we'll sort of publish it in a comment. But yes, there is no theoretical limiters. I suspect actually it's to do with, as these devices get older, you tend to drop back to older versions of the Maps app, and at some point it'll change back to a different system for getting maps, and I suspect that's where the cutoff will be. But where it's relying on this kind of map download server, yes, I would imagine it's available, and certainly I think it's a good bet going back to some of the later third edition devices, because they certainly got updated versions of maps until quite late on.
Yeah, indeed, and probably devices which have the free navigation is probably a good bet. And yes, although it's fair to say that you probably have to use Nokia Suite to update the maps rather than actually update within the client, but that's not a problem for most people. One more story here. This is probably the most controversial of the week. See, for more on it, do actually see our companion podcast over at allaboutwindowsphone.com, where there's an even wider discussion. At the end of January, Google are withdrawing Exchange Active Sync from their Google Sync server. Now, how does this affect Symbian? Well, many people, including myself, have been using this Exchange Active Sync mechanism as a great means to synchronize our Gmail contacts and calendar to our Symbian smartphones. It's been working really, really well. And as of the end of January, possibly as a side swipe against Microsoft and Microsoft's ecosystem for Windows Phone, whatever the reason, Google is withdrawing this Exchange Active Sync support, and the collateral damage is there for Symbian users who have been using it. Now, it won't stop working for devices which are already set up, but it does mean that after the end of January, you won't be able to set up a new Symbian device or a newly reset or replaced Symbian device with Exchange Active Sync. We do have a story up on the site, written by myself, with just some step-by-step alternatives for things to do next year should you wish to sync it up to Google, or indeed sync and back up anywhere else. So do go and see that for options. But Rafe, how serious do you think this is for Symbian users?
Well, obviously it's directly dependent on whether you use the Google services. There is this kind of caveat of new connections, but I certainly wouldn't want to be in the position of relying on a sync that would disappear if I had to reset my device or something went slightly wrong. I'd just be very wary of not being able to get up and running it straight away again. So even for those that are using it with saying, well, I'm not getting a new device, I'm not worried, it's a bit of an issue. Even more so, of course, for people who are planning to upgrade their device. Now, I think in most instances this would apply to someone who's maybe moving from an N8 to, say, an 808 or another Symbian device. And also it's going to have an impact on those who are thinking about moving off Symbian altogether, because you may well currently be using the setup and you want to keep on using it on another device. And the one thing you can say about Exchange Active Sync, and there's all kinds of ecosystem and corporate issues that we'll get to in a minute, is it does work on pretty much every mobile platform. There is Exchange Active Sync clients, and it's, I think, one of the very few protocols I can think of that applies to. And okay, there's things like USB, but even if you think about USB, the way it connects to some of them use MTP, some of them use USB mass storage, some of them are proprietary altogether. And so Exchange Active Sync was one of the very few kind of universal protocols. Now, with all that said, I'm not actually sure how many people will be syncing their contacts and calendar to Google. I mean, we know from having spoken to people and seen some of the comments that there are some out there, but equally there are plenty who don't. And I think probably the most important thing to realise in all of this is that if you're just using Gmail, it will keep working fine. And indeed, the default way of setting up Gmail on Symbian is to use an IMAP account, and that will continue working, no problem whatsoever. I know there are people out there like me who set up their Symbian device to use Gmail, but deliberately chose Exchange Active Sync and then filled in all the necessary settings. And it was slightly fiddly to set up, but they did that because they wanted their push email, or they wanted the contacts and calendar to come across as well. So in that sense, I think there will be a significant population who will be affected by this. And so we kind of need to, I guess, look at some of the other options that are out there. But I'm kind of hesitant to rain fire and brimstone down about the end of the world, because I actually think a lot of people will be using something else or will just be using it on the device itself. But there probably are a number of people out there who switched off the Ovi services and started using Google, as they were one of the most obvious replacements. And we'll talk about alternative options in a minute, but there are a few options you can use if you want to keep on using the Google services, aren't there, Steve?
Yes, indeed. I just wanted to mention before we go there that Google have said that they're basically trying to standardize on open protocols, and they've mentioned CalDAV and CardDAV. Now, I've heard of CalDAV. CardDAV is new to me, but is there a possibility you think that a third party could step in and developer and write a CalDAV or CardDAV Cyanide or Sync module for Symbian, and that's hook in that way?
Yes, absolutely there is. I mean, as you say, they're open source standards. I mean, Google is saying that's why they're pushing them. Honestly, I get a bit sceptical about the way Google communicate these things, simply because, you know, they use the open source standards where it's in their interest to do so, you know, where they want to break into a market and, you know, where perhaps they're more entrenched. I mean, search being the obvious example, they're quite happy to keep the information, you know, proprietary. So, I mean, in general, open source standards are a good idea, but actually I would always say the best thing is to have what's most convenient for the user. And the simple truth is that often proprietary standards get, you know, pushed more and, you know, are easier to use or have something extra behind them. So, you know, from a, I guess if you like, a point of view, ideal situation, open source standards, yes, they're better, but I also prefer to kind of look at it from a real world perspective. But in terms of implementing them, it wouldn't be all that difficult. And one of the things that would come across immediately is this would have to run on some kind of schedule to, you know, automatically go and check for this stuff. And indeed, there's kind of sync solutions that do this already for Symbian. And CalDAV at one point was going to be part of the Symbian platform, but this was when it was in the Symbian Foundation and it didn't quite make it through to one of the releases. I actually think there's some code lying about on a, you know, part of the kind of Symbian archive, so an enterprising developer might be able to go and find that and do something. Same would apply to CardDAV. You know, the downside to both of those is they're not push. In other words, you know, you actually have to have an application make an active decision to go and check for new content, unlike Exchange Acting, where it was all just pushed down to the device. It was all very seamless. And of course, there's extra setup problems. You know, you don't have the auto discovery that you do have in Exchange, although admittedly not for Gmail on Symbian, where you had to enter the settings yourself. So it's entirely possible. And of course, Symbian has the big advantage of, you know, it's very easy to write to both the context and the calendar database using existing APIs. So there's every chance that an enterprising developer could go ahead and do something. I guess the question would just be whether there's enough demand, and that obviously ties in with, you know, how many Symbian users are out there downloading and buying applications. And of course, it is at that point now where you know any developer would have to recognize it was probably a relatively limited market and would only have a limited shelf life, and he might choose to invest his efforts elsewhere.
I think it might have to be a labour of love or something he wants,
yes,
to do personally.
I think that's probably fair.
Yeah. And one possibility going forward, if you want to absolutely stay with Google's contacts and calendar and stay syncing new Symbian devices right through 2013, is the third-party Nueva Sync, which we have mentioned on the podcast before. It is a commercial solution. There's a fee per, I think, for the basic system, and then there's a fee if you want to go to the pro solution, which also does push email. Is it Nuevasync? We'll put the link in the show notes. I haven't personally used it for a long, long time, but apparently it has its own internal hooks into Google's contacts and calendar databases, and then offers that via Exchange Active Sync to your Symbian smartphone. So at the Symbian end, very little changes. You just carry on syncing all your data to Google quite happily, but you will have to pay this small fee per year. So have you actually used Nueva Sync, Rafe?
No, like you, Steve, I haven't really used it. I mean, I was talking to someone who has, and they were saying it works perfectly well. And we did reach out to the people behind Nueva Sync, or rather David Gilson, our colleague, did. And they told us that, as you say, they're using the GData APIs, which is actually something anybody could use, you know, in theory, for also building, a custom Google Sync app on the phone as well, if they so choose. And the benefit of that is it actually will also bring across tasks, which, of course, Exchange implementation doesn't currently do. So you get some extra functionality as well. But I guess some people may balk at paying a premium to, you know, have something they previously had for free. I guess the other option, you know, staying with Google services, Google very specifically said any of the paid for Google apps, which of course include all of these that we're talking about, they're still going to have Exchange Active Sync as an option. I mean, you know, partly comes back to why Google chose to do this. I guess we'll talk about that very briefly at the end. That does involve switching your Gmail account and your calendar over to something else, and you can either use it on a Google domain or you can actually use it on a custom domain if you so choose. That would enable you to keep using it kind of as before, although there is some inconvenience in switching over your Google account to kind of a Google for Business apps account. And again, there is a charge. I think I'm right in saying it's $50 a year.
Yeah, yeah. Just one other option, of course, is if people, and I know people get fed up with us mentioning a possible transformation over to Windows Phone, I following Nokia onto a new platform. But if people were thinking, well, maybe I'll get, for example, a Lumia 920 in 2013, maybe that's the direction I want to go over next year, then possibly a good solution would be to stay with ActiveSync and actually move and start up an account on Outlook.com, Live.com, or whatever, Hotmail.com, move over to a Microsoft ecosystem and then basically synchronize those exact same contacts and calendar up to the Microsoft servers and have that as the new system going forward, which means that then you're in a perfect place if you wanted to switch to Lumia and the Nokia Windows phones, then you could just sync straight on without any inconvenience. But Rafe, what do people actually do? Do they go for an Outlook.com, Live.com, Hotmail.com? Where exactly should they be looking in terms of setting up a new account here?
Well, I would recommend they go to Outlook.com because that's kind of updated to the modern Microsoft look and feel. And actually, I think it's a pretty impressive webmail service. You also get a kind of a people section, which is the equivalent of contacts. And calendar at the moment is still the old Live calendar. I mean, Microsoft have kind of switched the branding away from Live towards Outlook for all of this. And I suspect that there's going to be an Outlook-based calendar going live very soon. It hasn't happened yet. As you say, you can also use Hotmail, which is kind of a derivative of Outlook. Of course, you know, Hotmail has been around for years. You know, with all of this, yes, you know, you have to use a Microsoft service, but actually, I would say it's, you know, certainly approaching being like Google, and there are some things that are an advantage using the Microsoft services. You will get integration with SkyDrive, for example, which if you, you know, are using SkyFiles Pro, which we reviewed on the site, you know, you'll know all about that. And actually, there's some advantage to that as kind of having a cloud storage and everything you want. And of course, as you say, if you're moving towards Windows Phone or thinking about it, it's a logical thing to do. Even if you're not, that service provides Exchange ActiveSync. And the one thing you can guarantee is whatever mobile platform you end up on, you know, you will have support for Exchange ActiveSync. Because although Google's kind of taking this option away from consumers, it's still very much the de facto standard in the business world. And I really can't see that changing. Microsoft Exchange is very dominant, and even those kind of email servers that, you know, aren't Microsoft, they often will provide Exchange ActiveSync as well. And so in that sense, I think it's probably the most realistic in terms of staying open and keeping your options open to be able to sync with anything. I do expect CardDev and CalDev to become better established, but there's a question mark about whether Microsoft would choose to implement them on their own platform and indeed others. I mean, if you look at BlackBerry 10 that's coming up, that's almost certainly going to support CardDev and CalDev as well. And obviously, Android is doing so. The iPhone's a little bit different. Google's actually doing a kind of custom app to get that all working properly, or to get the full Google services. So actually, this kind of, do I switch to something else? I honestly think it's probably the most realistic option for those that want to be as flexible as possible. And it surprises me to say this, but actually Microsoft might well be the one to go for. I mean, I've been using Outlook.com myself for a while, and I think it's fair to say it doesn't have all the features of Gmail in terms of some of the labeling and the filters, but it's a lot better than, you know, Hotmail used to be 5 years ago, if anyone remembers using that. And, you know, it is a viable solution. And in terms of switching over, it's pretty easy because in either direction, as it happens, you can forward your email and you can pull in email from another account. We've got some instructions on the site, I think, about this, and actually they're quite widely available. So I wouldn't be surprised if quite a lot of people end up doing this, especially if they're staying with Symbian, you know, because ultimately you're going to be looking for a free service that has Exchange ActiveSync, and Outlook is certainly one of those.
Yeah, one thing I'll be looking to do in the next month or so, Rafe, I think there's probably a way for that many of our listeners and users will do the same, is to perhaps switch contacts and calendar through to syncing to the Microsoft ecosystem, but still maintain the standard Symbian mail connection to Google Mail via IMAP. Now, if you just go into the Symbian Mail setup and just say you want a Google account, that will automatically use IMAP protocols, and that will be carrying on working forevermore, probably. So yes. You, in the short term, you can carry on your normal Gmail or Google Mail sync while keeping the contacts and calendar synced up to the new ecosystem, but perhaps looking ahead to the future. And then at some point in the future, of course, you can switch over your email if you want to and start using the Outlook.com email address, which is just Exchange ActiveSync up to Microsoft servers. And at some point, maybe you've even phase out your old Gmail account, but the options are up to you. So there are plenty of options anyway, plenty of ideas, plenty of ways forward that will carry, see you carrying on backing up your contacts and calendar to the cloud and being able to access it on any terminal anywhere. So, let's move on, Ray.
We should just say one thing when you're doing this transfer process. The issue here is if you've got your contacts and calendar, on another service, it's not then integrated into one when you're looking at it on the web. So I think actually you're right, a lot of people will do that option because they actually look at everything on their phone, and it's kind of the Exchange Actions is almost just a backup and they don't use it very often on the web. I know I'm sort of in that camp. But you do consider switching over altogether, because one thing you can do, and this applies actually, as I say, either direction, you can set up Outlook.com to send email as your Gmail address and have it all forwarded. So you don't necessarily have to change your email address. You're just changing the kind of the client that's providing it. But yes, we should push on, because we promised not to talk about this too much and have managed to witch on for rather a long time.
Okay, there have been a few more updates, which are just worth mentioning. They're slightly smaller than the Big Maps update we mentioned earlier. There is now a Wi-Fi beta patch. If you've got a Bell Feature Pack 1 or Feature Pack 2 device, such as the Nokia 701, Nokia 808 and so forth, Nokia 603, and you've been having problems connecting to older Wi-Fi routers, then there's now a patch at Nokia Beta Labs. It's completely unpromoted and hidden. You have to know the exact URL, which is why we wrote a news story about it, Rafe. So if you go to allaboutsimbian.com and look at the appropriate story, we link through to the appropriate page on Nokia Beta Labs. And I think it's probably hidden because they're only trying to promote it to people who've actually had the issue, and therefore their support teams can say, go and look at this page and try this patch and see if it fixes it. But essentially it upgrades the Wi-Fi stack in these newer Bell Feature Pack 1 and Feature Pack 2 devices.
Yes, and the advice here, I think, would be don't install it if it's not broken. If it works fine for you on the Wi-Fi networks you use regularly, avoid it. If you're having problems, investigate this kind of beta patch.
And it didn't stop me trying to install it on my Nokia E7, which still refuses to connect properly to my Wi-Fi. It didn't install an E7. They've put in hooks that will only install properly on Bell Feature Pack 1 and Feature Pack 2. But there we go. You know me, Mr. Hacker. Also updated, there's an application compatibility fix and a big screen update, both for the 808 and I think probably for the 701 as well, Rafe. It fixes things like sync with Lotus Notes Traveler, which I haven't heard of for about a decade, but I guess it's still going. And the Nokia big screen update seems to be a whole new version of the application, although I don't personally use it. I guess you saw this on the 701 as well, Rafe?
Yes, I did. I mean, it's worth obviously installing if you're, kind of using these applications. Big screen had been working okay for me, but I guess it's adding some extra compatibility in with, other devices. So these kind of small updates are always welcome. I mean, generally what's happening now is, there's something going through a support process. Someone says it's not working for such a situation, and the Nokia support team, pass that back to the technical guys, and I guess a fix gets issued if it's become prevalent enough or it's been mentioned a few times. And this is kind of what Nokia means by having Symbian effectively in maintenance mode, that they are fixing the odd small update, but obviously the size of the team sort of involved in the engineering side is are much smaller than they were even a year ago, and let alone a couple of years back. So you can't necessarily expect to see new features, but it's worth sometimes reporting bugs that you come across, because sometimes you'll get these small updates and they will get fixed.
Yeah. Now, this is a slightly off-topic, as it were. Google's mobile page, which is m.google.com, which is always my go-to page for grabbing the Google software for Symbian, things like Google Maps, that's basically been replaced at Google's end by a high bandwidth, so it's not mobile at all. It's about half a megabyte, I think. And it's basically just a few links pointing to iOS and Android applications and a few big graphics, which is very disappointing. And it means people can think, well, how the heck do I get hold of the Google software for Symbian if I can't do it from m.google.com? Now, obviously, Google are moving ahead with Android, their own platform, and you can quite understand them trying to drop some of the older, which is now 3 or 4 year old Symbian software. But just in case you're still looking for these, perhaps you've got an S65th edition device, or you just fancy going retro for a bit, just to note that we've got a story up called Google's mobile page now Symbian hostile, but we've got older phones covered. So if you look for that, you'll find it. Basically, I've archived and put the last known versions of Google Search, which is basically integrates into the home screen and lets you do voice search of Google from your Symbian phone. There's the last version of Google Maps, which still works actually quite well over Wi-Fi and cellular. And okay, it's not perhaps as slick as the Google Maps and Android, but the basics are there. And if Nokia Maps has failed on you for some reason, or you just want to look up a point of interest in Google, then yes, Google Maps still works well. And of course, there's the Street View, which is still unique to Google. So there's that SISX file as well. And finally, the last version of Gmail, the Java client, which still works well. And Rafe, this Gmail client that came out in, what, 2007, 2008, hasn't really been updated much since then, but it's still incredibly low bandwidth, low hassle way to access Gmail, in the sense that almost nothing gets downloaded to your device. Every other email solution on Symbian, and indeed on most other platforms, actually downloads significant numbers of megabytes to your device. And if you're low on space, and it's a real problem, this is a Google Gmail Java client. Basically, everything happens on the server. It's like a little Java window, a menuing system onto Gmail on the server, and there's almost nothing happens on your device. So it's great for people with resource problems.
Yes, that's true. And indeed, on the older devices, I think it's one of the better kind of email solutions. I mean, it's easy to forget in these days of kind of big screen, touchscreen devices, that you know, often people were looking at email on very small screens, and a lot of people still are, and email kind of isn't central to their smartphone usage. I mean, I was talking to some friends the other day, and they said, nope, never use email on my phone. And I was kind of slightly horrified, because increasingly now I do read my email. I would still say I do most of the replying on a laptop or a desktop, but it's kind of an interesting frame of mind that I kind of got so used to it that I kind of always have to remind myself that people don't use devices in the same way. And I actually think this is a perfect example of where, you know, less is more. And of course, it's not as slick as, you know, some of the current email experiences, but for what it is, it's still worth using, especially if you're on an older device.
Yeah, absolutely. And things like, you can't actually apply labels, but you can apply starring, you know, in marking messages as worthy of going back to later. So that's one unique point, something you can't really do very intuitively on the Symbian mail, where you actually have to mark it for follow-up, which is not exactly the same as star. And you wonder, when does that follow-up then map through to being a star, and when does it map through, and so forth. So this is a foolproof way of doing that.
Well, certainly, arguably, there's a little more kind of true integration with the Gmail service. So, you know, if you're a heavy Gmail user, you know, things like the archive as well, and the ability to report spam, all from kind of single button presses, if you're on a T9 keyboard, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a reflection that it's a shame that Google never chose to do a kind of an update of that Gmail application for Symbian. And you know, the same actually applies to Windows Phone. Really, the only two platforms that have, you know, Google application in terms of mobile, at least, are iOS and Android. Now, obviously, that's because they are dominant in terms of market share, in terms of sales, particularly in the markets where Google is strong, i.e. over in the States, for example, where it's probably, I think I'm right in saying the market share of Gmail is higher there than anywhere else. But, of course, it sort of goes, I almost wonder whether Google is leaving a little bit behind in how much effort would have been required to do things elsewhere. I wouldn't begin to say it's the same sort of return of doing applications for iOS or Gmail, but it's an issue that Google are going to increasingly have to face, I think. And, you know, Symbian is kind of an early hint of this, that, you know, how do these ecosystems support, you know, users of their services when they're on other platforms? Now, the obvious answer is that they encourage them to start using their platform, but I think that's a pretty unrealistic goal. And actually, we kind of saw this, a forerunner of this, in the Symbian world, where, you know, Nokia tried to do its own services. Now, partly it didn't do them very well, but partly it became very obvious that people were used to, you know, choosing what they wanted to use and wouldn't necessarily be forced into using the Nokia version of the service. Now, if you're starting email from the very get-go for the first time when you get a smartphone, fair enough, you may well use kind of the default version, but very often you already have something in place, and certainly any existing user has a whole bunch of either email accounts or services, you know, where you store your pictures or something like that. And so the importance of reaching outside your own ecosystem, I think, is quite a good lesson to be learnt here. It does tend to be when you are very big on your own, you kind of lose sight of that. And I think that's something that maybe Google has done, and we were talking about this earlier with the Exchange story. And I wonder if they're not perhaps being a bit short-sighted. Now, in the case of Symbian, I can see why it's being left behind. I mean, I have to be realistic about it. But it is part of a wider pattern, if you like.
Yeah. Anyway, so if you do need any of those SIS files, or in the Gmail case, the JAR file, then we've archived them very handily on our server. So even if they go down elsewhere on the web, you can always find them. Good old allaboutsymbian.com will be here till the year dot. And talking on that very subject, Rafe, till the year dot, I guess we're looking at 2013 now in terms of supporting our readers, listeners, through the year. Now, Symbian obviously is still winding down, but there are still a healthy many millions of active Symbian users out there. I guess we're going to carry on trying for a fortnightly schedule for this podcast.
Yes, I think we'll certainly try for fortnightly. I suspect, as it has done on a few occasions this year, it will slip to 3 weeks, but I think we can probably make a guarantee that we will at least do something on a monthly basis and hopefully squeeze in an extra couple in between. And what we will obviously end up doing is, as we have in this one, talking about some more general issues as well. But we know we have some very loyal listeners out there, for which we thank you very much. And please do keep listening, because we've got things that we'd like to keep talking about. And I guess so one of the things we'll do is talk about some of the lessons that Symbian can teach the rest of the industry. And also we will pick up on when there are updates or interesting apps available for the Symbian devices, because we have the expectation that certainly for 2013 that will continue. Beyond that, yes, we may have to take another view.
Yeah, I suspect many of our listeners are in the same boat as me. They've still got something like a Nokia 701 or an 808 and or even an N8, and basically not wanting to move to another platform, to another device, until that other device or platform can match all the functionality in their current Symbian device. And I still haven't got to that point. The 808 still is the device across everything in the world that does it for me. And so for that very reason, if I wasn't already doing this podcast, I would be tuning in throughout 2013 to find out just what's available and what updates do come along. I guess we should finally just wish all our listeners again a very happy new year, and we will catch you all in 2013, Rafe.
Indeed we will, yes. So happy Christmas from me as well, and we look forward to talking to you again in 2013.
Yeah, bye for now.